Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg. I'm your host for a half hour each weekday morning, taking your phone calls, actually. If you have questions you'd like to raise about the Bible or about the Christian faith or the Christian life, feel free to give me a call. We can talk about those things together. We have a phone number that you can call. It's 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. And if you want to give me a call, we can get you through today. The earlier you call, the better for you, because we do go. The program goes by rather quickly, so if you call early, we can generally get you on. If you don't call early, then it's hit or miss. You might make it, or you might not. Right now, we have Richard from Seal Beach wanting to talk to us, so let's talk to him. Richard, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. My question is, what does the Bible say about allowing immigrants into your country, and should we help support them? And I will hang up and listen to you on the radio.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye now. Well, instructions that God gave to Israel about immigrants was that they should receive them and that they should not mistreat them. If somebody wanted to dwell among them, they could be circumcised and keep the Passover and things like that, become a proselyte, in which case they would be like a native of the land, the Bible says. So one of the reasons or one of the incentives God gave them to be kind to refugees and immigrants is that Israel had spent time as slaves in Egypt, and therefore they knew the heart of a slave. They knew the heart of a stranger, of a foreigner, they said. So having this this compassion on foreigners was something that would only make sense, since they had been foreigners and knew what it's like to live in someone else's land. That's what God said. So they should have a welcoming attitude. Now, if people came pouring into their land in large numbers and not converting to Judaism, they might have had to do something to control the influx, but in general, they were supposed to be welcoming of strangers and treat them well in their land. Of course, perhaps we have to ask, well, how might that apply to our own country? And it's hard to say how that particular teaching would apply to our own country, since Israel was a religious nation, and people who came were expected to live under their religion. And that being so, it's different than our nation. We don't require people to live under our religion. But perhaps becoming an Israelite and being circumcised and so forth was maybe comparable to becoming a citizen, or at least a legal resident under the laws of the state here. So it should be the case that we should welcome immigrants. I think our country always has. I forget how many immigrants a year. I think a few million immigrants a year come legally to this country. So we've always been a welcoming nation of immigrants. In fact, anyone who's listening to my voice who's not a Native American is an immigrant, or if you go back a few generations, your ancestors were immigrants. So we can be very thankful that this nation has allowed immigration. If the current problem with the illegal immigrants is what is behind the question, I'm not really sure what to do about those situations. I mean, I'm not a governing official. I don't know how to process people who are allegedly, refugees from bad situations in their own countries. I think every nation has to have some kind of a system for integrating those people into our society. And I think we do have such a system. I don't know if it's a just one. I don't know if it's too slow. I don't really know very much about it because I've never had to go through the process myself. But I do think there is such a thing as having certain control over immigration. Otherwise, you can simply be flooded and your culture can be totally immersed in other cultures that are not agreeable with the culture of a nation. And that was something that would have been a concern in Israel, too, if the Philistines, for example, had just all started coming en masse to live among the Israelites in their villages and not converting to Judaism. That would have been a problem. And, in fact, God didn't even allow the Canaanites to dwell among the Israelites for that very reason. God wanted the Israelites to be able to maintain the specific culture that God had given them through his laws. And so I think that would at least suggest that a nation has the right and maybe the duty to protect its culture and its laws and its norms and so forth from being overwhelmed by people who don't have sympathy for that. So these are hard issues. I mean, if I was a government official, thank God I'm not, I would probably, in some capacities of government, I would have to deal with those issues directly and, you know, form policies. I think every nation needs to be compassionate, but there is also some control over immigration that even the Bible itself, I think, would imply. Appreciate your call. We're going next to talk to, well, there's not a name by that one. Okay, let's talk to Mike from Orange, California. Mike, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'd like you to help me understand a passage. Hello?
Yes.
I'd like you to help me understand a passage in Genesis in which Ham and his brothers looked upon the nakedness of Noah, and his brothers kind of immediately turned away. Ham did not, so as a result, he was either punished or cursed. And in my reading of it, it didn't seem like it was a peeping Tom event. It seemed like an accident, and it didn't. And Noah was drunk. So the first part of my question: why was Ham punished and Noah not punished for being drunk? And the next part of my question is that there are certain religious organizations which view the curse upon Ham as being the curse upon the black race, because the descendants of Ham are supposed to be the black race. So could you address that issue?
Sure, I'd be glad to. First of all, if you read the passage carefully, Ham was not cursed or punished. His son Canaan was cursed, but there's no reference to Ham being cursed in the passage. The story is a little differently than the way you remembered it, too. You remembered it as the three sons came in upon Noah when he was ill-disposed to be seen. He was drunk and undressed on his bed. And as you understood, two of them turned away and one did not. Actually, what happened is Ham alone came into Noah's tent and saw him in this condition and could very well have covered him up and left it at that. But instead, he didn't cover up his father's nakedness. He just went out and gossiped about it. He went out and told the brothers about it. In other words, instead of fixing the situation, which he could have done and which the other brothers actually did do, he instead just went out and made it a matter of no doubt dishonorable talk about his father. I mean, it's obvious if you see your parents in a situation which is undignified, you could cover for them. I mean, the Bible does say honor your father and your mother. Certainly, you'd honor somebody most if you catch them in an embarrassing situation to cover that up, if you can. And that's what Ham could have done had he been a more honorable man. Instead, he went out, he left his father naked like that and told his brothers. Now, his brothers were not of his disposition. They didn't want to see their father in that condition, knowing that he probably wouldn't wish to be seen in that condition. So they went in to his tent with their backs turned to him. They had a blanket or a garment or something over their shoulders. And once they got to where they knew he was lying on his bed, they threw the garment over him to cover him up, and then they left. So they actually, they chose not to look at their father in that condition. And by the way, most people would prefer not to be seen in that condition. I know people who don't want to have an open casket because they don't want people to see them in that condition. It's embarrassing. And I know people who, when they are really wasted away with cancer and they don't look healthy anymore and they're all wasted away, they don't want people to see them in that condition. There's lots of conditions we would prefer people not to see us in. Even in the cases where we brought it up on ourselves, like Noah did. But Ham cannot be blamed that he accidentally came into the tent and saw his dad. He can only be blamed for what he did after that. And he didn't do the right thing. The other brothers honored their father more and honored his privacy more. Now, when Noah woke, he did utter a curse. But the curse was not uttered against Ham. It was uttered against Canaan. He said in verse 25 of Genesis 9, "Cursed be Canaan. A servant of servants he shall be to his brethren." And then he said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be his servant." And he said, may God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. So the problem here was that Canaan is cursed, not Ham. And we don't know why Canaan would be cursed in this situation. But it may be that Canaan was cursed not because of this situation. It may be that this just gave occasion for Noah to utter a prophetic curse against the Canaanites. The Canaanites would themselves bring curses upon themselves by their evil deeds in later generations. And, of course, it would be eventually necessary for Israel to drive the Canaanites out of the land because of their wickedness. And so the Canaanites were, of course, destined to come under a curse. And Noah announced that. But it might not have been because of what Ham did. It might only be because Canaan was Ham's son. And, when Noah learned what Ham had done, it may be that he felt like this kind of impropriety is going to be seen later on in his family, too, in Canaan's line, which it was. Only worse things were. So this event became the occasion of Noah uttering a prophetic curse on Canaan. But the curse on Canaan may not have been justified by what happened on this occasion. It may have just given the background for such a curse to be uttered. In any case, anyone who thinks that the black races are cursed because of this has not read the passage carefully. It's not likely that the Canaanites were black, and only the Canaanites came under a curse in this story, not the people of Ham. Now, it is true the black races, as near as we can tell from Genesis 10, the African people did descend from various lines of Ham, but again, there's no curses on the black people in any of these passages, or in any passage I know of.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Mike, good talking to you, brother. Okay, we'll talk next to John from Orange County. John, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Steve. Thank you very much for your great program and your thoughtful answers. I have a question that somebody asked me the other day, a good friend of mine, and I didn't have a very clear answer for him. And that was, he's a widower in his late 80s, has a very good friend that's a widow also in her late 80s. They feel that it's too late in life to get married, but they enjoy each other very much. And the one thing, though, that's missing from their life is travel. So they're wondering if it would violate any scriptural admonition if they traveled together, took a cruise together, or something like that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I would think that if they shared a bed, they would be probably in violation. I mean, assuming if they're having sex. Now, some I think a man in his late 80s can't have sex, and I don't know. Some men can't. I'm sure.
I'd say they're not having sex.
Right. My assumption is that their friendship is not on a sexual basis. Therefore, right. There would not be technically, there's not anything that would forbid them from traveling together. Some people would be concerned about 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, which says avoid all appearance of evil. But this is actually a mistranslation in the King James. All the modern translations have corrected it. Paul didn't say avoid every appearance of evil, though people love to quote that because obviously they'd say, well, a man and a woman traveling together would appear evil whether it is or not, and we should avoid those appearances. But Paul didn't say avoid every appearance of evil. That's the King James says that. All the other translations say avoid every form of evil. In other words, evil in any form that it comes in, avoid it. So it's not really referring to what appears evil. Nonetheless, even if that verse doesn't work for that point so well, I think Christians ought to be very concerned about the way their actions are construed and whether we are giving people any reason to be suspicious that we're doing the wrong thing. Many times when you're doing something entirely innocent, people will think the worst anyway. But there are situations that are controversial. Now, I don't know how controversial it would be in the eyes of most people for a person almost 90 and another person almost 90 to travel in the same, boat. But, you know, it would be an issue. I mean, if they were younger, it'd be very much an issue because people would certainly assume that they were having sexual relations as they're traveling together just because people assume such things. There might be people who would assume the same thing about them at their present age. I don't know. And therefore, I would not be able to say they're doing the wrong thing, and that is, if I heard of such a couple that was traveling that way and they were not having a sexual relationship, I could not call that sin. I could not judge them for that. But I might advise them that such a thing could easily lead people to believe that they're sinning, and you don't want to ruin your testimony for Christ that way. If they have separate lodgings when they travel, then I would think that would make it considerably less controversial. And controversial is really the issue here, right? I mean, because obviously if they're not sinning, then they're not sinning, and no one has any right to tell them they have to do such and such a thing if it isn't a sin. But at the same time, it can be controversial. I think people need to be careful about controversial behavior, just because people who don't understand or who misjudge could say, well, you call yourself a Christian, but look what you're doing. Of course, these days, there's not very many non-Christians who would even think it controversial to be sleeping together. That's our culture has simply removed any stigma from that. And it would be more Christians rather than non-Christians who'd probably judge them, which is a shame. But the point is, it would be something to be, if I were at that age and contemplating any such thing as that, I would definitely take pains to have separate lodgings or separate, you know, have situations where we're separate enough that it would not look like there's something, going on that Christians should not do.
Well,
that'd be my take.
Much.
All right. Well, God bless you, John. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now. Okay, Scott from Bellflower, California. Welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for taking
morning.
My call. Steve,
yes.
I'd like to know, is there any reference in this scripture in the Bible that refers to cremation? And what is your thought on that?
There's no reference in the Bible to cremation. It is not forbidden, and it is not advocated, so it's one of those things that's extra-biblical. And when something like that is extra-biblical, I would consider that no one should forbid it, unless it violates some principle that is biblical. In other words, if the Bible doesn't speak directly about cremation, but it speaks about some other principle, which would be seemingly violated by cremation, then I would consider that to be something to forbid. Now, a lot of people say that cremation or burning of a body in the Bible is always treated as a negative thing. And it's true. Culturally, it was a way of showing contempt for somebody if you burned their body instead of giving it a burial. People wanted to have decent burials. They wanted to have honorable burials. And so if you were, respected someone, you do what you could to bury them. Even when people were taken in war and hanged publicly, those who honored them would come and get their bodies and give them a burial. Because being buried honorably was important in Middle Eastern culture. It might be important to a lot of people today, too. But it's not important to everybody. And what was a value in Middle Eastern culture isn't necessarily the same thing as a value of God's. I don't know that the Bible would give any indication that being buried rather than cremated has any advantage in the sight of God, either in terms of, morally or practically. Some people say, well, if you get burned up and you're reduced to ashes, well, how's God then going to resurrect the body? But obviously, lots of Christians are burned up, even who aren't cremated. They die in flaming houses or they're burned at the stake for their faith. Lots of people have been burned up and turned to ashes. I don't think that's going to be a problem for God. He made the first man out of dust anyway, and he can make you out of dust again. And if he can't, we're all in trouble because we're all going to turn back into dust, whether we're cremated or not. So it seems to me that there's nothing really, practically to object to in it. I have, and I've mentioned this before on the air because people ask about this fairly often, I've talked to some morticians, and usually they contact me after I've talked about this on the air. When I always say I don't know of anything to object to in cremation. I've had at least two Christian morticians contact me afterwards such times and say, yeah, cremation is really unappealing It's really gross. The person who works at the crematorium has to do some really unsavory things, like break up the bones of the person who's been burned up and things like that. And so I would say there are some unsavory aspects to some parties, I guess, in cremation, but that's a different story, a different question, really, than is it wrong biblically. I don't know of anything in the Bible that would suggest it's wrong biblically.
Well, thank you, Steve. That's exactly what I wanted to hear to clear my mind on it. So I appreciate your explanation, and I accept that. Thank you
very
much.
All right, Scott. Good talking to you. God bless you. Bye now. Linda from Culver City is our next caller, and we might have time for you if you want to call 1-800-227-5278. You're listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg, and our caller is Linda from Culver City. Welcome to The Narrow Path, Linda.
Thanks for talking with me. I was reading 2 Chronicles, and in chapter 21, verse 17, it mentions Jehoram's youngest son being saved. But then in 22:1, sorry, I was running. I'm a little out of breath. In 22:1, it mentions a youngest son and with a different name. So I was a little confused. And one of them ends up...
Jehoahaz.
Okay.
Yeah, Jehoahaz is what he's called in verse 17, and he's called Ahaziah in chapter 22. This is the same person. A number of people have more than one name in the Bible, and some of the kings are known by more than one name. For example, Uzziah, I think he was also called Azariah, or at least there was another king that was. The Jewish kings usually had one name by which they were known, but sometimes they had multiple names, like Jehoiakim was also known as Kaniah and also known as Jeconiah. And so you'll find all those names used of the same king. So I think what you're finding is simply a king who was known by 2 different names, and one of the passages you're looking at called him by one of the names and the other by the other.
Okay. Is it something where when they become king, they give him a different God-given name, or...
Well, in some cases it could be so. They could have been given a throne name. Yeah, I mean, we don't read of that happening here, but we don't read very much of detail. So it may very well be that one of them was a throne name that was given to them at the time of their coronation.
Yeah, I couldn't find much on it. Is there some place specific to look for those kind of... I didn't think it was a discrepancy. I just didn't understand it, but I understand
well, the
it
information,
now.
The information is published in lots of different places. I have a number of books about biblical history that would have that information that you could, or a biblical encyclopedia, or even for that matter, even a secular encyclopedia. If you went to Wikipedia, online and looked up his name, you'd probably get that information.
Oh, okay. Is Wikipedia? I never think that's. I never really quite trust it. I usually try to go to some of the.
A lot of people don't trust Wikipedia. A lot of people don't trust Wikipedia, and I guess there must be some articles on there where there's untrustworthy information. Every article I've looked up on things I knew about were accurate insofar as the things I knew. In other words, I've never read a Wikipedia article where I was knowledgeable of the subject and said, oh, they got this wrong. And that includes when I've looked up biographies of people who are friends of mine that I knew, they usually have it right. They are peer-reviewed, Obviously, if you get something wrong on there, it can be corrected. In any case, information like this is not likely to be the kind of thing that anyone would necessarily lie about or get wrong. This is pretty kind of common knowledge stuff.
Yeah, and being history, it's kind of hard to... Well, you can rewrite it.
Yeah.
That's not true. Okay,
you can,
well, thank you a lot.
All right,
have a good day. God bless you.
God bless you, Linda. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. I don't mean to recommend Wikipedia because, like I said, it's got a reputation for... everyone kind of mocks it as a source. So, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff on there that can't be trusted. And I don't use it extensively, but sometimes it'll be the first place I'll look for something, some basic information. And generally speaking, it's what they say there is what I find in all my other sources I look into. So I haven't really found the problems that some people have. Maybe some people use it a lot more than I do. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast, and I want you to know that our website is loaded with resources that are all free. We don't charge for anything there, and there's not about 900 MP3 files you can download for free. They're Bible studies on, well, verse-by-verse studies through the whole Bible, as well as topics, many hundreds of topics, which are very thorough, cool expositions on those topics, and you would might find them helpful. Lots of people say they have. I just met somebody from North Carolina just this week who told me he'd probably listened to everything on the website. That's a lot. It's a lot there. In fact, I've met someone else even more recently, too, that had said the same thing. I'm always surprised when someone has listened to everything at the website, but that's some people said they're on their second time through. So there's some people who find value and help in these resources, and they are free. But even though they're free, they're not worthless. They are worth something. We just want you to have them. And so help yourself. We have other kinds of resources at the website, too. We also have, it might be interesting to you, back in the 70s, I was a cartoonist, and I drew comic books that were discipleship manuals. Two of them are at our website. They're not available for sale, but you can read the entire books there and even print them out to, if you want to put them together and use them for discipling people. They've been used around the world for discipling people in lots of situations. They are comic book formats, though, but they're teaching manuals. You might be interested in that. They're at the website also. There's also some articles I've written that were published in magazines years ago. So on different topics that people ask a lot about. So there's tons of stuff there. And everything is free. You don't even have to give us your email address or sign up or do anything like that. We won't even know that you came and took our stuff. You can just have it. Now, even though our things, are free, and our radio broadcast is free, the time on the radio is not free. We actually pay for that. And we are listener-supported. That's what keeps us on the air. If you'd like to help us keep the program going on this station, you can write to us at The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. That's The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. And the website I mentioned is thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk again tomorrow. God bless you.
Hello, good morning. We're glad you could be here today to listen to Steve Gregg on The Narrow Path right here on AM 740 K-Bright. Steve's ministry is one that reaches across all different lines. And whether or not you are a first-time listener or you've been listening to The Narrow Path the entire time it's been on K-Bright, you know the power and the impact of this program. It helps people to get clarification on issues that they just don't know who else to ask. But Steve's your guy. That's why we need to support this program. That's why it's on the air. And Steve's ministry is important to so many of you. So we hope you'll act on that. Go to Steve's website. It's thenarrowpath.com. There's a place there that you can give, and it's safe and it's secure. That's at thenarrowpath.com. You'll also find all those great resources that Steve mentioned right there at that website. However, if you didn't catch the address or if you'd like to be able to give in another way that doesn't involve an online donation, please call K-Bright and we'll make sure you have the other info. You can reach us at 800-227-2337. Please remember that the views and opinions on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Crawford Broadcasting Company, its ownership, management, or its advertisers. Joyce Meyer is next on AM 740, K-Bright. The Bottom Line's Roger Marsh.
I would never insinuate that if you're a Christian, you're automatically a Republican or automatically an independent. We're Christians first and foremost. We're citizens of the kingdom of heaven. So in terms of our political affiliations, it's not as important to me as where are you going ultimately.
Discerning Talk Radio, The Bottom Line. Weekdays at 3 on AM 740. K-Bright, strengthening the local body of Christ.
At 50,000 watts, this is Southern California's most powerful Christian station, KBRT and KBRT HD Costa Mesa, and on the web at KBRT740.com.
Welcome to Enjoying Everyday Life with New York Times bestselling author Joyce Meyer. On today's program, Joyce will be teaching from her series entitled Pursuing What Matters Most. Does it feel like you're always chasing after something but never actually achieving it? Maybe you're chasing success or a relationship, or maybe you're chasing away pain and loss. Your heart can desire a lot of things, but does it desire the one thing that matters most?
When you pursue a relationship with God, He will pursue after you. He wants to have a relationship and give you the desires of your heart. All you need to do is look past those things and look to Him. Listen today as Joyce will help you begin putting God first and experiencing all that He has for you. Now, here's Joyce with today's teaching, Pursuing What Matters Most.
Let's look at Hebrews chapter 9, verse 8. I take a little bit of a creative license with this, not making something out of it. It's not by adding to the word or taking away. But, you know, there's scriptures that you can get a lot of different views on if you look at them properly. Now, this is talking about the Old Testament tabernacle, the outer court, the inner court, and the most holy place, and which really, we're made like that. You know, we're a tripart being. We've got this body, we've got the soul, and we've got the spirit. So there's actually three parts to us, too. So looking at it from that angle, let me just read you this scripture. By this, the Holy Spirit points out that the way into the true Holy of Holies, or you might say, the way to really live in the Spirit, which is what we should all want, is not yet thrown open as long as the former or the outer portion of the tabernacle remains a recognized institution and is still standing. Anybody with me on that without me explaining it? So here's what I want to take from that for this lesson tonight. And I know there's other lessons you can draw from that.